The sixth trumpet predicts the fall of the Ottoman Empire. The following is an exciting prophecy, or look into the future, but by Josiah Litch, L-I-T-C-H. He wrote an article in 1838 predicting the exact day that the Ottoman Empire would fall. This was a fairly large empire, approximately 13 to 16 centuries after Christ. So again, his prediction was based on a Bible verse in Revelation chapter 9, and it predicted that the Ottoman Empire would fall on August 11th, 1840. So let me just read this. So the title is The Sixth Trumpet and the Millerites. In 1838, Josiah Litch, a preacher in the Millerite movement, made the interesting prediction that the Ottoman Empire, Ottoman is O-T-T-O-M-A-N, Ottoman Empire, and just for those that are interested, this empire later became the country of Turkey, or at least that's where it transitioned to. So, interesting prediction that the Ottoman Empire would fall on August 11, 1840. His prediction was based upon his reading of Revelation chapter 9 and the text, in quotes, "were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year," end of quotes. Following established guidelines of applying a day for a year, he realized this was 360 plus 30 plus 1, which equals 391 years. His prediction, which appeared in the book, The Probability of the Second Coming of Christ, around AD 1843, was widely circulated in New England. Skeptics predicted Miller's Advent movement would fall August 11, 1840, when they supposed this date would pass with the Ottoman Turks still in power. But Litch's reputation as a prophetic expositor was confirmed on August 11, 1840. On that day, the Sultan's power over his Mohammedan empire was severely curtailed, with his supremacy being taken over by a coalition of Christian powers. So just, excuse me, as an aside, there was a transfer of power on that day from the Ottoman Empire, a gentleman named Rifat Bey, B-E-Y, to another gentleman named Mehemet, M-E-H-E-M-E-T, Ali, A-L-I, Pasha, P-A-S-H-A, of Egypt. So the power went from the Ottoman Empire to Egypt and a coalition of European nations. So it concludes this paragraph saying that it was the skeptics that were shaken, while the believers and the Second Advent movement, begun by William Miller, received great strength. So great strength was given to this movement by William Miller, a strength in their faith. Okay. So to continue, and this is a pretty deep prophecy. And so, again, this is just one little touch on it, and we'll look at this again. And again, I encourage people to email me questions and comments. So this is information from, again, Advent Shield and Herald, Josiah Litch, May 1840. It was given after the rise of the this is just an excerpt from his article. It was given after the rise of the Ottoman Empire to torment or harass and weaken men, the Roman Empire in the East, 5 months. So again, the Turks were sort of chastising or torturing the Roman Empire as the Roman Empire was falling. This is the Roman Empire in the East, Constantinople. If these are prophetic months, because it says 5 months, as is probable, it would mean 150 years. But when did the empire start? When did it rise? Well, Gibbon, G-I-B-B-O-N, in his Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, states 1299. He says, Othman first invaded the territory of Nicomedia on the 27th of July, 1299. So that's when he's saying the Ottoman Empire, or at least this chastisement, started. So I should back up and say quickly that Revelation, the two verses that they are using here to make this prediction are Revelation 9, verse 5. Let me just make sure that's correct. That's correct. And then Revelation 9, verse 14 and 15. So Revelation chapter 9, verse 5 says, "And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months, and their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So again, so it doesn't talk about killing anybody, but it talks about tormenting them. And that's where they get this. These words that I'm reading to you are a statement that the Ottoman Empire, it hadn't come to be yet, but warriors were chastising and torturing the Roman Empire as the Roman Empire was falling for 5 months. And again, 5 months prophetically is 150 years. So that's what they're saying. Is this true that this is a prophecy? So they're saying it started in 1299. That was when the first Ottoman invasion occurred, with Ottoman invading the territory of Nicomedia. So if we date the origin of this empire in 1299, the 150 years would end in 1449. During the length of time, the Eastern Empire of Rome was harassed beyond measure by the Ottoman power, but was not subjected entirely to it. The year 1448, Amurath, A-M-U-R-A-T-H, the Turkish Sultan, besieged Coria, C-O-R-I-A, one of the strongest cities in the Roman Empire. The end of the 5 months would come the next year. We should naturally look for some great defeat of the Christian emperor's army. But was it so? So far from it, that after a long summer siege and a great loss of men, the fall coming on and the rain setting in, the Turks stopped their siege and retired. So it didn't look like it was going to happen at all. The empire was now left in peace, the Roman Empire. One would almost be inclined to think the word of prophecy failed. But the time came, and the word of God was confirmed by the event. John Palaeologus, Palaeologus, emperor of Constantinople, was dead, so he died. And his brother, Constantine Diakozes, D-E-A-C-O-Z-E-S, would not venture to ascend the throne without the permission of Amurath, A-M-U-R-A-T-H, the Turkish Sultan. So as an aside, this was a very surprising move. Usually emperors of one empire do not consult with the leader of the other empire before they ascend to the throne. This is very different and unique. So this Constantine Diakozes sent ambassadors to ask for the consent of the Turkish Sultan Amurath before Diakozes would presume to call himself sovereign. This happened in AD 1449. This shameful proceeding seemed to presage, P-R-E-S-S-A-G-E, the approaching downfall of the Roman Empire. Ducas, D-U-C-A-S, the historian counts John Palaeologus for the last Greek emperor without doubt, because he did not consider as such a prince who had not dared to reign without the permission of his enemy. So Gibbon, an infidel, is so struck with the singular accuracy of the record of the origin of this empire that he attributes it to some foresight in the historian of the rapid growth of the monster. But would it not become Christians better to attribute it to the superintending providence of that being who had set a bound for that and other empires which they may not pass? This is very difficult reading, sorry. Who had given them power to harass and torment the empire of Constantinople 5 months, and to kill or subject it to their own sway an hour, a day, a month, and a year, the whole being 541 years and 15 days. Yeah, sorry about that. I should have read that before, because that was difficult reading. I think what they're saying there is just that Gibbon was very impressed with the accuracy of the dates of the origin and or of the 150 days or 5 months of torture, and then the 391 years where the Ottoman Empire became so grand. So to go to the next verses in Revelation 9. So right now we've just done the verse, Revelation chapter 9, verse 5, which talks about Ottoman Empire torturing Eastern Rome, Constantinople, for 5 months or 150 days. Now we go to Revelation chapter 9, verses 14 and 15. And it says in the King James, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound to the great in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for to slay the third part of men. And again, if you count out the using 1 day as stated to be an actual year, when you add up all these times, again, you've got an hour, you've got a day, you've got a month, and you've got a year. And they're using a year is 360 days. So in this case, 1 year stated in the Bible verse equals 360 years prophetically. It all adds up to 391 years, which is the reign of the Ottoman Empire until it fell August 11, 1840. This is a description by Josiah Litch. The four angels denote ministers of judgment. They refer to the four nations of the Seljukan Turks, S-E-L-J-U-K-A-N, Turks, of which the Ottoman Empire was composed, located near the river Euphrates at Aleppo, Iconium, Damascus, and Baghdad. Up to the period of 1449, they had indeed tormented the Christian Empire, but could not subject it. When the sixth trumpet sounded, God seems to have overawed the Greek emperor, and all power of independence seems, as in a moment, to have fled. So it says Greek, but it's the Roman Empire. He, in a most strange and unaccountable manner, voluntarily acknowledged that he reigned by the permission of the Turkish Sultan. The Turks very soon after addressed themselves to the work of reducing Constantinople. This they effected AD 1453, 4 years after the emperor obtained permission to descend the throne. The last third of the ancient Roman Empire was now reduced by Turkish arms. The number of horsemen were 200,000. What this number means, expositors have been at a loss to determine. Yeah, if you actually multiply that out, it'd be 200 million, which seems a little crazy. It says back in the narrative here, but I am inclined to believe with Mr. Miller that it means 200,000 twice told, making 400,000 in all. What makes this probable is the fact that the Turks usually had from 300,000 to 400,000 horsemen in their army. That seems amazing from what I've read about armies throughout the history of the empires. They had, when Constantinople was taken, 300,000, and some say 400,000 horsemen besides many foot and a fleet. Since the fifth trumpet sounded, there has been an astonishing change in the arms of Turks. They then had breastplates of iron and were armed with dirks and scimitars, S-C-I-M-E-T-M-A-R-S. Now the scene has changed, and they are prepared with breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone, and out of their mouths of the horses proceed fire, smoke, and brimstone. Their power was in their mouth and tail. Their tails were like serpents, long cylindrical instruments like serpents with heads in them, bullets with which they did hurt. This description has long been considered by expositors as a description of firearms and gunpowder, and indeed I do not know how anyone who knew nothing of such instruments could describe them more clearly. Again, these words are written by John the Revelator, or John the Beloved, the disciple of Jesus, in the book of Revelation. The design of these plagues is stated in the 20th verse. It was to lead the people on whom these plagues were inflicted to repent of their sins and break them of devil worship, etc. But they did not repent, neither of their murders, nor their sorceries, nor fornications, nor their thefts. They, like most of whom the judgments of God fall, remain impenitent to this day, and the Turks continue to oppress them. So I'm just going to skip through a couple of final paragraphs here. It says here, but when will this power be overthrown? That is the Ottoman Empire. According to the calculations already made, that the 5 months ended in 1449, again, the 5 months were when the Ottoman Empire or Ottomans sort of tortured or chastised the Eastern Roman Empire at Constantinople. So according to the calculations already made, the 5 months ended in 1449, the hour 15 days, the day 1 year, the month 30 years, and the year 360 years. Let me read that again. So the hour equals 15 days, the day equals 1 year, the month equals 30 years, and the year equals 360 years. It all added up, it equals 391 years and 15 days, will end in AD 1840, sometime in the month of August. The prophecy is the most remarkable and definite of any in the Bible relating to these great events. It is as singular as the record of the time which when the empire rose. The facts are now before the reader, and he must make what disposition of them he thinks best. Okay, so a couple more paragraphs. From the foregoing extracts, it appears that the Sultan, again, the Sultan of the the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, Rifat, R-I-F-A-T, space B-E-Y, Rifat Bey, felt his weakness and most gladly accepted the intervention of the great Christian powers of Europe to assist him in maintaining his empire. In case war was the result of the decisions of the London Conference, it, to all intents and purposes, threw his dominions into the hands of those powers. As long as the decision of that conference was in his hands, he maintained his independence. So this is the point here, because they're going to make a good point that the actual Ottoman Empire wasn't totally, the power wasn't 100% transferred on that day. But what happened on that day was he gave up his independence because he agreed to allow the Egyptian leader to make the decision as to whether he would accept this new coalition, European coalition, to kind of divide up the Ottoman Empire. So the point that the author made as well was just as Constantine Diakozis, the Roman leader who was stepping up to take the place of his brother, John Palaeologus, who died, transferring the power from Rome to the Ottoman Empire. The actual power did not change on that day that Diakozis asked permission of the Turkish Sultan before he would ascend to the throne, but for all intents and purposes, it did. And so they're saying the same thing happened here, even to a greater degree, because it appears that this gentleman, the Sultan, Rifat Bey, was in a more precarious situation as far as not being able to sustain his empire. So to restate it, as long as the decision of that conference was in the hands of the Sultan Rifat Bey, then he maintained his independence. But the ultimatum once suffered to pass from him into Mehmet's hands, Mehmet Ali Pasha of Egypt, and the question of war or peace between Mehmet and his allies or the European coalition was beyond the Sultan's control. If Mehmet proceeded to the ultimatum and the difficulties were peacefully adjusted, he would still remain independent and support his own throne. When then was the question put officially within the power of Mehmet Ali? So the following extract of a letter from a correspondent of the London Morning Chronicle of September 18, 1840, dated Constantinople, August 27th, will answer the question. So from this letter, Rifat Bey arrived at Alexandria on the 11th of August and threw the decision of the affair into the hands of Mehmet Ali of Egypt on the 11th of August, 1840, and from that time it was out of the Sultan's power to control the affair. It lay with Mehmet Ali to say whether there should be war or peace, but it was his discussion with the European coalition, which consisted of four nations, England, Russia, Austria, and Prussia. So again, on that day, August 11, 1840, the Sultan of Ottoman Empire, Rifat Bey, chose to leave it up to the Egyptian leader, Mehmet Ali Pasha, P-A-S-H-A. So from that time on, it was out of the Sultan's power to control the affair. It lay with Mehmet Ali to say whether there would be war or peace. And he continued to communicate with the European coalition. So a couple of points as we conclude. So it's my perspective that this is primarily important as just underscoring that the Bible does have the ability to predict the future, so which is called prophecy. Again, this was around the world something that was amazing back in 1840 when people saw that this actually this prediction came true. It's fairly complex how they came up with this, and just looking at these Bible verses on a sort of basic, superficial level, it would be hard to sort of discern this. But it is amazing how if we do believe it, it predicted it right down to the actual day. And again, Joseph Litch actually predicted this at least like 2 years before it actually happened. He predicted originally that was going to be August of 1840, and then sometime at least months before it actually happened, he predicted the actual day of August 11. So it was kind of amazing. And it gave significant strength and momentum to a different movement, which had overlapped with Josiah Litch's prediction. And it's the people that were part of both of these companies. And that was the movement of William Miller, who, with a different prophecy called the 2300-day prophecy, had predicted the second coming of Jesus Christ in 1844. So although the prediction of the downfall of the Ottoman Empire did occur on the day that was predicted, August 11, 1840, the prediction of the return of Jesus on October 22, 1844, did not come true. Even so, those who study the Bible in depth do know that something amazing did happen in heaven on that day, October 22, 1844. And we'll talk about that more later. But that's a part of the 2300-day prophecy. And if you do believe in prophecy in the Bible, there's also a statement based on Bible verses or a Bible verse that there will be no more prophetic time, no more prophecy after 1844. So that's pretty amazing as well. So there were several prophecies up until that year, 1844, and there's even a prophecy predicting the year that Jesus would die. And the stoning of Stephen, the martyr. But it's interesting that 1844 was the last prophecy to come true, and the last one in the Bible. We do know that Christ is coming again. We just don't know the exact day or hour. Only the Father in heaven knows that. So there's a statement at the beginning of that article that we went through, which is refers to the purpose of the trumpets in Revelation. It says, "The trumpets of history sounded to alert people of the final judgments, to call them back into covenant relationship. They were designed to call people to repent, but they repented not of their sins. The book of Revelation reveals Christ working out the provisions of God's covenant in the last days. It also reveals Christianity's response to that covenant." And that was written by a gentleman named Ulrich, U-L-R-I-K-E. And then I'm just going to read these two verses in Revelation chapter 9 in both the King James Version and also the Message by Eugene Peterson. So again, the verses are Revelation chapter 9, verses 5, and then down below, it's verses 14 and 15. So Revelation chapter 9, verse 5, "And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man." Wow, that's going to hurt. And then down in verses 14 and 15, "Saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year." So for an hour and a day and a month and a year, "for to slay the third part of men." Now, Eugene Peterson, the Message says, so he has it sort of partitioned into paragraphs, so it may not be exactly the same Bible verses, but they will overlap. So it's actually verses 3 through 6. Again, this is the Message, which is a paraphrase. "Then out of the smoke crawled locusts with the venom of scorpions. They were given their orders. Do not hurt the grass. Don't hurt anything green. Don't hurt a single tree. Only men and women, and then only those who lack the seal of God on their foreheads. They were ordered to torture, but not kill. Torture them for 5 months, the pain like a scorpion sting. When this happens, people are going to prefer death to torture. Look for ways to kill themselves, but they won't find a way. Death will have gone into hiding," period. All right, so that's the first one. The second part states, "The sixth angel trumpeted. I heard a voice speaking to the sixth angel from the horns of the golden altar before God. Let the four angels loose, the angels confined at the great river Euphrates. The four angels were untied and let loose. Four angels all prepared for the exact year, month, day, and even hour when they were to kill a third of the human race. The number of the army of the horsemen was twice, 10,000 times 10,000. I heard the count and saw both horses and riders in my vision. fiery breastplates on the riders, lion heads on the horses, breathing out fire and smoke and brimstone. With these three weapons, fire and smoke and brimstone, they killed a third of the human race. The horses killed with their mouths and tails. Their serpent-like tails also had heads that wreaked havoc. Period. Well, that ends this little sort of narrative on the fall of the Ottoman Empire as an amazing prophecy, prediction, based on verses from Revelation chapter 9 by Josiah Litch, which predicted the exact day that the Ottoman Empire would transfer power. And that was August 11, 1840. And because it came true, again, it's very exciting when prophecy comes true, it gave a great momentum and power to the movement of the Millerite, William Miller, his movement that was predicting the return of Jesus Christ. So just to let the cat out of the bag, Jesus didn't come back on October 22, 1844, but what they ended up determining that happened on that day was Jesus Christ moved from the holy place into the most holy place, where he began the investigative judgment, which would happen again at the time of the end, where he starts to judge first his people, people that believe in Jesus, and then those that are unbelievers. So that judgment time began on that day, October 22, 1844, and we'll talk about that at a different part of this website. God bless y'all, and thank you.